Hello, everyone, and welcome. This is Let's Sleep On It, Reclaiming Parenthood, the podcast. And I'm your host, Taylor Kulik, a sleep and well-being specialist and occupational therapist. My mission with this podcast is to examine the parenting narratives that dominate our culture and grow together as parents. Here, we will talk about biological infant sleep, as well as many other parenting-related topics. And you'll also hear real empowering journeys from parents who are parenting against the grain. I hope that you walk away from each episode feeling inspired, empowered, and supported. Please remember that none of the information shared in this podcast is medical advice, and you should always speak with a trusted healthcare provider if you have any concerns. Let's dive into today's episode. I want to share with you guys one of my all-time favorite companies. I'm passionate about this company. I've been using them for over 3 years, and they make some of the cleanest and most affordable personal care products for the entire family, personal care and wellness products. So they have herbal remedies and tinctures. They have personal care products. My husband and myself use their deodorant on a daily basis. And most recently, they've launched a home care cleaning line, which we now have transitioned pretty much all of our cleaning products over to their cleaning products. So we use their cleaning spray and their dishwasher detergent and their laundry detergent and their dishwashing soap. And we have been so impressed with not only the quality and simplicity of their products, but also the affordability and small company, family-owned company experience that we get when we shop with them. So the company is Earthly, and they are just phenomenal. You can go shop at earthly.com, and Earthly is spelled earthly.com/ref/tkulik. Alternatively, you can thank me for your checkout. Thank me for your order in the checkout section, and you can use the code Taylor10 to save 10% off your first order. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. Today, I have a guest on to answer a question that I get asked all the time. And that question is, what do I do when my partner, when my significant other wants to sleep train or doesn't agree with co-sleeping or any other parenting decision that you are disagreeing on? And this is just not my area of expertise. So I invited my friend Christine on to give us a full answer and share her wisdom with us about this topic. So Christine Earthart is co-founder of the Center for Thriving Relationships alongside her wonderful husband, where she adores helping couples create the kind of love they've always wanted. They offer couples retreats, online courses, and private sessions, and they train and certify others in their Thriving Relationship Coach certification program. Christine is host of the Thriving Relationship Show, a TEDx speaker, and has been featured in Psychology Today, Happify, Thrive Global, NBC, ABC, and CBS. You can learn more at centerthrive.com. So without further ado, let's get to this conversation. Hi, Christine. Thank you so much for joining me today. Would you mind, for those that don't know you, can you just tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Of course. Thank you so much for having me, Taylor. So my husband and I run, it's called the Center for Thriving Relationships, and it's our passion to support couples in every stage of their journey to really learn the proven roadmap for how to create a relationship that gets stronger and better through the years.
I love that so much. It's so important. So I wanted you to come on today to talk about this topic, this issue that I get asked about all the time in my work. So as you know, what I do is I mostly support families with sleep, with responsive sleep for their children. And so a lot of these families that I'm interacting with on a daily basis, they might choose to co-sleep in some form, whether that's bed sharing or just being responsive to their child throughout the night. Most of these families choose not to do any form of sleep training, instead wanting to respond and meet their child's needs until they don't need them anymore. And so one of the problems that I think specifically mothers, I'm sure it's not only mothers, but I think it's usually mothers that run into this problem, because I think just generally speaking, it's usually mothers that kind of research how they want to parent. I think a lot of times mothers they're more connected in the early days with their baby. They're more in tune with their intuition. And so what mothers tell me is my spouse, my partner, is not on board with how I want to practice responsive sleep with my child. My spouse wants me to sleep train. He's tired of the baby being in our bed. He doesn't want a bed share. What do we do when we are not seeing eye to eye about this topic that is so important to me and that I think is so crucial? And so I wanted you to kind of come on because I don't ever really know how to answer that question. Like what I usually tell moms is I usually say, you know, if this were me and like when my husband and I have had disagreements about parenting related things, I usually start with getting curious and I say, well, why do you have a concern about this? Or why is it that you want to do it this way? And then go from there. But in terms of like the rest of it, like what follows after that, I'm not an expert in relationships. So I wanted to bring you on to talk about this topic. And I was hoping you could give us some wisdom and some insight. So where do we start? Where do we start when we are in disagreement with our partner about how to parent our child, specifically related to these topics like sleep, where we often feel very isolated ourselves because we're often parenting against the grain. Everyone else around us is saying we should sleep train, and now so is our spouse. What do we do? Where do we start?
Well, such a good question. And first, just want to honor everyone that place because it can be a really painful place to be in, especially like the parenting journey can bring up so much. And when you feel like your partner is not on the same page with you and on the same team with you, it can be a really confusing, painful place and not feeling validated and heard and feeling torn those ways. So rest assured, there's absolutely a way to do it where you can really stay allies along the way. So I love curiosity. I think that's one of the most important ingredients for communication. So I'll share a few things and then we'll take it from there. So I would say one thing is to really get on the same team. So you don't have to necessarily be on the same page or even understand each other whatsoever, but it's really positioning yourselves side by side, looking at it together. So very often when there's something that it feels like what I want and what you want is different, or my needs and your needs, like there's no way for them both to be met. It's very easy for us to put the challenge in the middle of the two of us. And then we're really working against each other. You know, what tends to happen is there are two monologues instead of a dialogue and we don't feel heard. We just, you know, we're talking, kind of defending how we see things. And then our partner isn't hearing us. And so we keep turning up the volume. We use more words. We use stronger words. We check out. We do different things because we deeply don't feel heard. And that's usually when it's in the middle of us. So instead, it's like really like, okay, we are allies and teammates in this because chances are, you know, both partners ultimately want to do the right thing. It's like finding what are the things that we actually both do agree on. So maybe our strategy is different. Most often, you know, what both people want is like, we want to have a good relationship and we want, you know, what's best for our child. You know, relatively, most people want that and probably also want to have, you know, a healthy life and also want to be well rested and be nourished as parents. Because of course, that's so important. Like chances are both people really want the same thing. And that can just be really helpful. Like, okay, we both have good intentions because it's really easy in relationships to feel seen for our worst intentions or just even see our partner's worst intentions. And so it's like, okay, we're going to stand side by side looking out at this together. So rather than working against each other, which means we have like limited resources, it's like, okay, let's just both get really curious and collaborative together. And nobody is wrong here. So let's just, we're side by side. We are allies and teammates, and we're going to look out at this together. Like given kind of, this is what you long for. Here's what I long for. Let's just get curious. How do we really work together to find, you know, the highest solution for our family? So I think that piece is important. And I think it's just so important to also communicate about the inarguable truth. So there's a bit of what tends to happen when we aren't in agreement with our partner is that we can really double down on facts. And I think there's absolutely a place for that to bring the articles and all of that is there's, that's actually another important piece of it, of course, is to maybe read some research together. So we'll get to that. And to really share what's really most vulnerable for us. So it's very easy, you know, in this area and so many other areas of relationships that we just make our partner wrong. Like if they bring up something, it could be around sexuality, it could be around finances, like we just kind of want to, or certainly around parenting, we want to make them wrong in some way and prove to them why that isn't a good solution or a good method. And instead, if we can share more vulnerably about like, what are we afraid of? Like, I'm really afraid, you know, if we aren't, you know, sleeping together as a family, I'm not going to get good sleep and our child's going to not have secure attachment. Or, I mean, it could be like sharing just like all of our deeper fears around it, which isn't then to make anything wrong. It's not like an intellectual discussion. It's really getting into our hearts, because the more that we're in our hearts, the more that we can find each other's and maintain emotional connection. And that's really the aim, is like, how do we maintain emotional connection while we're navigating something that can be really delicate? And then also let them share, like, what are they really scared of underneath it? Usually when we're triggered and we're in an emotionally charged conversation, it's because something that's really, really important to us feels threatened. And there is nothing like our most intimate relationships for our brains to perceive one another as a threat, you know, to whether or not my need for connection, for, you know, for peace, for balance, for independence, whatever it might be, for those things to feel threatened. And so it's like, if we can uncover, like, what are we actually scared of in a way that's inarguable? You know, like, someone can't, if we brought up a fact around, you know, co-sleeping, somebody could say like, well, that's not true, I read this research over here. But if we share something that's just like our own tender, vulnerable fear, we can't really make each other wrong for that. Like, you're not scared of that. Like, oh no, we know that, like, that's what's true for me. So I think that that's a really important part of it. And to really validate that for each other. So rather than, again, making wrong, it's like to give each other a whole lot of empathy. Like, okay, that makes sense. Like, we long so much for someone to say, that makes sense. And nobody's wrong. Like, oh, whatever someone's fears are, whatever they're longing for more of, like, okay, that makes sense. And now we can work with that. Like, if we can bring kind of, what are the deeper, more vulnerable fears we both have? And what are the unmet needs that we're trying to have met for ourselves and for our family by choosing whatever strategy we think is best? Like, how do we now get collaborative and resourceful to make sure that our fears are really honored and comforted and assured in some way? So if, you know, so if a partner, for example, is like, well, what's going to happen to our sex life? Or what's, I don't get any time with you. It's like, okay, that makes so much sense. Thank you so much. Your good intentions. Like, you want to have this close relationship with me. I want that too. How can we make like extra effort to make sure we have these other scheduled times for together, or whatever it might be. If we can bring those to the surface, then it's like, okay, we can honor all of that. It's definitely like a yes. And, so I'll pause there for now, because I can certainly keep going.
Yeah, no, I love that. I noted a few things that you said that I really loved. I love that you said nobody is wrong, because as I've thought back to my own marriage and like the really difficult disagreements and arguments that they've turned into arguments, essentially, because we didn't agree on something, the common denominator in those conversations were that we were both wanting to be right so badly and trying to prove the other wrong. And you're right, we weren't listening to each other, and we weren't, both of us weren't feeling heard. Both of us weren't listening to each other, and we weren't really getting anywhere. I call it, it's like we're talking at each other. We're not talking to each other. So I loved that piece so much. And as you're talking about these fears, these vulnerabilities, this makes so much sense to me, because I mean, if we really think about sleep training culture and what has convinced parents that they need to sleep train their children and that they need to get them into their own bedroom and that, you know, they shouldn't be bed sharing and co-sleeping and breastfeeding to sleep, et cetera, is fear. It's this huge industry, this huge narrative that perpetuates fear in vulnerable new parents. And that's how they sell things like sleep training, like baby gear, right? And so it makes sense that our partner would feel those fears too, because they're probably hearing about why you need to sleep train your child from their coworkers and from their family members. And so, I mean, it makes so much sense, really, at the root of all of our desire, not desire, but all maybe our the feeling that we have that we need to sleep train or do something that we might not really actually feel comfortable with, but we feel like we need to do this for our child and for ourselves, is fear. And it's usually not rooted in truth. And so it's so important to just, like, at a foundational level, get to the bottom of, why do I believe this? Or why does my partner believe this to be true? Why does my partner think this is what we have to do? And start there. And I don't know, that just makes so much sense to me. It's so much about fear. And if we can validate those fears, but also maybe present some information that would alleviate those fears, or maybe say, you know, I had that fear too, but here's what I learned that changed my mind. How much more heard and seen would your partner feel? And then they're more open to hearing what you have to say as well.
You're spot on. I felt that so much. Like if our partner thinks that we haven't had those same fears, because chances are we've just already processed them. And so we're kind of coming to them already with the decision we've made after like moving through our own fears. And to them, it could appear as though you haven't considered all these potential concerns. So it's like, oh, that makes sense. I know. So anyway, what you said, I just want to validate that entirely. I think that's so, so, so important. If you just think, you know, like if you were in a burning building and you're like, fire, fire, and people are like, that's not a fire. You know, like we're just going to get louder. We're just like, oh, I smell that too. But you know what? Actually, it's just like that outlet over there does that funny times. Everything's okay. Or whatever it might be. It's like, we want to like, actually, it can feel terrifying actually to hear somebody's fear. So if our partner brings up a concern, or we're going to like, consider the possibility of having a conversation where we're going to welcome their fears. That might sound intimidating to someone, like, I just want to quiet those. But actually, it's like leaning into someone's fears. That's what dissipates them, which is just like parenting. You know, when our kids have big emotions, it's not denying the emotions. It's like, we want to turn towards them and hear them and validate them and comfort them. So it's very similar. There's like that little kid, of course, inside of all of us. And it like spans the entire lifespan. So anyway, I love the connection though that you made with how fear is so connected to this issue in general.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So you kind of stopped in the middle. Do you have more to add just to your like initial thoughts about how to navigate these difficult situations?
Yeah. Well, I would say, okay, so definitely like communicating about it in a way that you're hearing each other and offering each other empathy and seeing each other's best intentions and getting curious. Empathy, curiosity, and appreciation, I think, are so, so, so deeply important. And I think it's just really easy in relationships to go right for each other, could do better differently. So I think learning how to communicate it, and just to give people like hope, is that I can't count the number of times over the past, like, you know, well over a decade, my husband and I have had the great honor of sitting with couples navigating parenting, is that people will feel like they're really far apart in what they want. And once they just start communicating about it in a different way, they are exponentially closer than they ever imagined. It was really just when we don't feel heard, we just get louder and we get even more entrenched and we double down on what we want. So just a message of hope for people. And then I think just like uncovering what the need is. And I think for some people, it's, you know, might be about their own connection to their partner. And so we love like rituals of connection for partners. It's just so important when we're, you know, life is, it can be, of course, so many different things can come up for people around why they might have concerns. So many different things. It could be around the safety and well-being of the child, lots of different things, but just to find ways to stay connected. So every relationship has a love account. And if you just think your romantic relationship is a living, breathing thing, it's always either growing or deteriorating. It doesn't just stay the same. So we need to always be nurturing it. And we have this love account. So every interaction, we're either putting a deposit in, taking out a withdrawal. When our love account is low, which could be we're sleep deprived, we haven't spent much time together, all of our kind of kindnesses are going towards our kids or other people in our life, and we were kind of short with each other. So totally understandable things. It's just natural real life. But if we're not nurturing one another, then when the love account is low, it's really easy to take things personally. Little things become big things. You're just kind of working against each other. So one really important thing, I think, whenever we're navigating different wants and needs, is actually just to start nurturing your love. Because if anybody's ever noticed, like after a date night or after you had time where you were just like deeply connected, all of a sudden it's easy to just give each other the benefit of the doubt and like, oh, no big deal. I know you were just trying to dot, dot, dot. And so making sure that you're like really taking time to have a full love account. So Dr. John Gottman, who's like the leading researcher in relationships, his statistic is that we want a 20-to-1 ratio of positive to negative interactions. And so just to like take a little pulse, because the negative ones have so much more lasting impact. So just to remember like, okay, my partner's probably really, they have like needs that are deeply unmet in other areas of life. And to realize that like, maybe this is really hard for them. And there's probably something they're longing for that's really hard for me. And how can I stretch to see like, what would really fill up their love tank, but really ultimately our relationships kind of love accounts. I think that's just, it's amazing to me how much more easily couples can navigate inevitable conflict and challenges when they are just really connected. And just, it changes us physiologically when we feel that bond with our partner. So I would say keep doing that. And then also HALT, I think, is just such a great acronym for all couples, but certainly, you know, parents who might not be getting a lot of sleep. So HALT is an acronym. It's not original to us, but it stands for hungry, angry, lonely, tired. And the idea is that when we are either hungry, angry, lonely, or tired, we have limited capacity to actually show up in a way that is going to be productive and conducive to having like an effective conversation. And so like my partner and I, if it's like late at night, we start trying to talk about a more delicate situation, we're like, oh, wait, HALT. You know, like, I bet we'll see it a whole differently in the morning or the next day. And so just to encourage couples to really find a time when they can both be really set up to have the conversation, like make a date to have the conversation, when people can come to it from a more centered place, a more relaxed place, not when you're like exhausted and you're kind of multitasking. I think that's really, really important. And then the other thing I'll just share is using the language of what I dream of is. So sometimes in relationships, when we bring an upset to our partner, we can just point out how we feel like they've failed us or let us down in some way and what didn't work for us. And there is absolutely a place to talk about what didn't work and to learn from that. And our partners can easily feel like they've failed and maybe feel like even more you're on different pages, that they can never get it good enough. So painting the picture of like, what am I dream of is, you know, co-sleeping with our child and then us having like this really close family and that we just like raise this kid that's like so happy and healthy and we're on the same sleep cycle and I feel rested so I can bring my best self to you and our relationship thriving, like paint the picture, because that's usually so much more compelling and irresistible. Whereas if we hear what our partner doesn't want, sometimes we can feel opposed, but if we paint the picture, like what's our bigger dream? Again, a lot of times it's like, oh, well, yeah, I want that too. That sounds like a really good dream. So yeah, that's another little relationship tip.
I love that. I love all of that. I'm writing down HALT because that I feel like that's good for everybody, including like thinking of our children too. Like, is my child hungry, angry, lonely, or tired? Like that's all of the things right there. And for us too, of course, as adults. But something, as you were talking, I was thinking about, and this is a little off topic, but not, I mean, it's still very related, but specifically like in the postpartum period, you're a new mom, you have young children and you're caring for their needs, especially on social media. I've seen this trend of kind of like, what's the word I'm looking for? Like belittling men in a way, and kind of putting blame, like all of the blame on a mother struggling on the man. And this kind of language that, well, we shouldn't have to tell men that we need help. They should just help us. And this really bothers me because, you know, you're talking about men have needs too. And it's not just men, you know, this could go either way, but just, this is kind of a generalized conversation. Men have needs too. Our partners have needs too. It's not about when we're constantly discounting their needs and not giving them the benefit of the doubt and just expecting them to know exactly what we need, exactly what our baby needs, exactly what we need from them so that we can support our baby without communicating that to them. I mean, that just must feel like beat down after beat down after beat down. And they must just feel like they're failing. And so I'm just kind of, as you're talking, like, this all sounds so beautiful. This is the way communication, ideal communication in a relationship should be, but I see this trend on social media and it drives me nuts because like men are people too, you know, they might not be experiencing exactly what we're experiencing, but they're still experiencing when they have a baby, they're still experiencing a change. They're experiencing a change in relationship with their partner. They might be sleep deprived as well. They're maybe leaving the house to go work from home. So I would just wonder if you have any thoughts about that, or if you've noticed that kind of trend as well.
Yes, 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 yes. It's so common in relationships, even when people reach out for support, you know, a totally understandable, like secret wish a lot of people have is like, finally, somebody else is going to point out to my partner all the things they've been doing wrong. And like, finally, they're going to wake up and get it. And, or just feeling like life would be so much easier if my partner would just blank. Like most of us have that. Like, and it's not to say that that is invalid. And nearly every relationship challenge I've ever seen is co-created on some level. And that's really where like our greatest freedom and our greatest wisdom is. So this is not only to support our partners, it's like for our own inner peace, because it's such a deeply painful place to live in. Like that thought loop of like, I'm doing everything. Why aren't they like reading my mind and meeting all my needs and I'm caring all like that is, it is just the exasperation and exhaustion and frustration. And then it creates disconnect in the relationship, which is then even more painful. So it's not a good place to be in for anyone. So really there's like so much more benefit to everyone if we start to look at it differently. So I love shifting from just focusing on what I need from my partner to like, huh, I wonder what the relationship needs from me right now in order to be in a healthier, stronger, happier place. And we don't need to have an answer immediately, but just to start getting curious. And like I mentioned before, I just think it's so helpful for us to realize that the thing that we long for more than anything from our partner is probably the hardest or one of the hardest things for them to give us, which is naturally they're not giving it, not because they don't want to, because it's really easy to interpret. Like if you just cared more, if you loved me more, if you were a better man, you would dot, dot, dot. And those are just really myths and illusions. Yeah. It's really not about that. And to realize that, you know, it comes much more naturally to us. It's like, you know, biologically, perhaps more natural for some people, or it's just more in somebody's strengths. And so not taking it personally, and also realizing they're longing for something right now, that is probably the hardest thing for us to give. And to them, they might be like, oh, well, things would be so much better if you would just do this. And to them, it seems so easy. You know, if you would just talk to me more kindly, or if we could make love more often, or it could be any number of things. And over here, it might be like, oh my gosh, it's like the last thing I want to do, or the last thing I have time to do or energy to do or whatever it might be. And so, yes, just like what you're saying, like they absolutely have unmet needs as well. And I think that that's just comforting. It's not like, oh, they're just like getting a free pass here and they're living the life over there. And here I'm just carrying this burden. It's like, oh, they're probably suffering and struggling in some way as well. So I think that's so important. Again, just to be a team and look at, okay, like what do we each need to do to really support each other more fully here? So yes to all of that. And so often, you know, we don't do a whole lot of like gender specific things because we're all just so unique. And there are certain things that, that are common. And that is like, most men long to feel like they're doing a good job. So a common kind of contrast is that women might be more likely to run to their friends to tell their friends all the sweet and kind things that their, you know, male partners or husbands did, like, oh my gosh, he did this and he did this. Whereas men are more likely to kind of, if they were to run to their friends, would be like, oh, I did all of this and it lit her up and she was really excited. And so as we're sharing all these ways that maybe our partner is failing us, just to know that that probably makes it less likely that they're going to do more, because it's like, I've already failed. I'm just going to give up and I can never win here. And it's so deflating. It's so discouraging and disappointing that like takes all the fuel out for them. And they're just like kind of going through the motions, doing things out of obligation and dread and fear instead of like out of joy. And so just making sure that we are appreciating everything we can possibly appreciate, recognizing they have needs too. Like all of that is so important for them to feel inspired and to actually see like, oh, this little thing like really did make a difference. So
yeah.
Everything that you're saying, just
I love that. Well, I love that. And the thing I think about is it's interesting because in this community, it's, you know, most of us want to be responsive to our children because we want to respect them. We want to, you know, treat them like they're humans, right? But a lot of times we kind of lose that belief system, those ideas when it comes to our adult partner. But really, they have many of the same needs as our children do. Like we would know, like it would be common sense to think that if we're just constantly criticizing our child all day long and never telling them what we appreciate about them or really deeply connecting with them and looking them in the eye and having these beautiful moments during the day, but everything is just correction and critique, obviously our relationship with our child would be on the struggle bus because, I mean, that's just, it's not really a healthy relationship for growth and connection. And the same is true for our partners. And it goes both directions. But I think for some reason, it's harder for us to see that in the midst of it, especially when it's an adult versus a child, because we just think, well, he's like, or she is, you know, an adult and they have coping skills and they should know what to do and they should know what I want them to do. And so I just think that's really interesting, but it's really, there's a parallel there, I think, between an adult and child relationship and an adult to adult relationship. We all have those basic foundational needs of connection first.
For sure. I love that you're saying that, because I think that can probably make sense to people too, because if we, you know, maybe it's less emotionally charged, is like caring for the sweet, innocent child, and to realize like there is that part of all of us. And it's a common thing. Again, so understandable that people are like, oh my gosh, I feel like I have an extra kid in my partner. That's really, really common. And again, it's such a painful place to be in. So I totally, my heart goes out to everyone. And what I love so much, so we are passionate about attachment theory when applied to adult romantic relationships. And it's newer, like attachment theory when applied to parenting, you know, has been around a lot longer, until we realize like, oh my gosh, we are social creatures. Like all of us, that doesn't go away. Like that really is from, you know, birth to the very, very end of our lives. We all are hardwired for empathy, to know that somebody has our back, that they are emotionally available and responsive and emotionally safe for us to engage with. And like criticism, there is never a time in our lives that criticism feels good. We feel unsafe when that happens. And so, and there really is research to back this up now, like all the things that kids really long for, most of them are just important. And if we don't feel either like that we're, you know, securely attached to our partner, we'll typically either withdraw and check out, which then usually a partner feels like, oh my gosh, now I'm caring even more. I mean, it's oftentimes, research shows it's more often the woman who falls into the pursuer role. And the pursuer is not that you're romantically pursuing. It's more that you're going to pursue a conversation, that you kind of don't feel peace until there's resolution. So it might show up as being maybe more dominating, nagging more, being more controlling, more critical, blaming more, which is tied to what you were just sharing. Whereas the man, not always for sure, but the man tends to be more the withdrawer, which means they're kind of going to retreat to their cave. It's going to look like stonewalling, checking out. And when these two things are at play in relationships, and it could be reversed as far as gender, what happens is that it just gets stuck in this repetitive cycle, that as one person blames their partner for all the things or criticizes their partner, they're going to retreat more. They're going to withdraw even more. And as they withdraw even more, then the pursuer becomes even more anxious, even more agitated, even more angry, frustrated, disappointed, discouraged. And so they tend to like go into like attack mode more. So their nervous system is going to a fight response. And as they do that, because they ultimately feel like they're alone, like you don't really care, I'm in this all alone, you're not engaging with me. So what they long for more than anything in those moments is for their partner to engage and be with them in it, kind of like what you're saying. And what the withdrawer longs for more than anything is for their partner to be more positive, to feel appreciated. That's what like melts them and allows them to see like, oh, it's safer for me to engage. So they go into a flee or freeze response because they don't feel safe. Like, gosh, when I come closer to you, good things don't happen. So I'm just going to hang out over here. And so the two of these roles can just get so polarized in a really unhealthy way. And so we want to realize like underneath it, one partner's really longing for like a lot more engagement and their partner being with them in it, in parenting, in all the household, you know, responsibilities. And the other partner's really longing to feel like their partner appreciates them and there's like some positive energy and warmth for them to like re-engage. So just sharing that because it is such a common dynamic. Yeah. And again, so painful. And in those moments, we do literally the opposite of what works. And it just gets us further away from what we really want.
So true. And so hard to be mindful of that in the moment, but it's good to know and just try to be more mindful of that. Okay. I have one more question. You've helped us so much, I think, with just navigating differences in opinions about how to parent. I'm wondering, this is a common question I get as well. I'm wondering about a dynamic where maybe the partner is really, really cares about what their mother, his or her mother thinks, or father, or someone else that they're close with. And this happens a lot. We see this a lot with like a dad and he's very close with his mom, and his mom is very about, you know, sleep training and not breastfeeding for too long. And so he really cares about her opinion, and she's making comments to him about parenting. And so then he's bringing that to his significant other and saying like, I disagree with you because my mom said this or whatever. What is your assessment of this situation, and how would somebody navigate this? Like, get the mom out of the relationship.
It's so good. It's such a common one. So first of all, just know that we humans tend to think that what is known is what is best until we're like open to questioning it. So it's really easy that we just think, oh, this is what I know. It's what's familiar. So this must be the best way. And that isn't necessarily the case. And so, but know that the brain is like prone to like favor the known. And so that's all it is, though. It's just the known. It doesn't mean it's actually the best way.
Right.
And we believe so much in like partners being each other's number one, you know, like it's so important for secure attachment with romantic partners to feel like I've got your back. Like I'm with you in this. It's the two of us. Even when we disagree, like we are a united team. And it can really like chip away at that when we feel like, oh, you are, you know, kind of pairing up with this other person, like you have their back, and in that you don't have my back. And so it's going to create a lot of disconnect, a lot of conflict, when it's really like that part of us, that primal need to feel like, oh, okay, we're in this together. So that's really important. So I would just say, to make sure the two of you are the united team. And then also I would support anyone. It's such a real thing. So many of us can relate to that. I mean, as kids, we go through such effort to try to get our parents' love, right? Yeah. We're looking at like, how can I avoid rejection from them, and how can I get their love? And again, it's like, oh, just to feel the tenderness and to be humbled by like, oh my gosh, that's still alive. I'm 25 or I'm 45 and here I am still. And so I would just invite someone to, you know, go on a journey and get support with either reading books or going to therapy to really look at like, where is this theme coming up in my life? You know, like what is the deeper thing here for me? Like the deeper invitation for healing, because it's probably keeping someone hooked other places in life and really limiting them, that they're kind of limiting the fullest expression of who they can be and what their truth is based on what simply they're doing to avoid rejection or disappointing someone else, and they're pulling their love away. And that's like with infinite compassion for that person, probably the parent, right. Like everyone has good intentions. We don't want to see anyone with bad intentions, but it can really, and the fear of like losing our own parents' love can be terrifying. So I just want to name that. Like it can be so easy for the partner over here. Like, oh my gosh, you're a grown man. Why are you still wanting your mom's approval? And it's like, oh yes, seems so easy from the outside, but it's like a primal fear of like, oh my gosh, I'm going to like, if I tell my mom we're doing this, she's going to feel rejected. And that's like, you know, the 2-year-old inside of me is like freaking out about that. And so just to have so much compassion, be so nurturing. And it's a really important thing though to address. And again, share the more vulnerable thing, because out of someone's fear, they might just want to make their partner wrong. Like, oh no, my mom said this and she's giving me all these articles. Instead, see if you can uncover like, if we were to do this, I'm afraid that my mom would think like, what are you like, have the more real conversation and just bring that out into the light, and then be a team. Like, oh, I get that. Okay. I want you to feel like safe and secure in that relationship. And we're a team in this. And you can have those more vulnerable conversations together and united again, instead of it coming between you.
Mm. Such a good answer. I love that so much. Well, Christine, thank you so much for joining us here. I feel like you shared so much wealth of information and knowledge with us, and I'm sure that it will help everybody listening. Can you just tell us, if somebody wants to learn more from you, can you tell us where they can find you and what resources or offerings you have for people?
Of course. It's such an honor and joy to be here with you. Thank you so much. So if you head on over to centerthrive.com, so C-E-N-T-E-R, thrive, T-H-R-I-V-E.com. So centerthrive.com, you'll see a variety of free resources. We have one that's like a free communication guide. So it's the number one thing that you're not doing that's preventing you from thriving. And it really guides you through kind of a formula for how to have conversations in a whole new way. Can't recommend that highly enough. That's just a free guide. And then, yeah, we offer virtual relationship counseling, coaching anywhere in the world. And we have weekend in-person couples retreats. And then anybody that wants to support other couples, we also train people to become certified relationship coaches through a 6-month virtual training. And then we also are active over on Instagram. That's where we tend to hang out the most. So we're at Center for Thriving Relationships. And we have a variety of blogs and other free resources on the website and a quiz too that you can, you know, it's like 2 minutes to see, is your relationship dying, surviving, or thriving? So you can head on over there to check all that out. Thanks.
Amazing. And I'll link that in the show notes as well, so everybody can find it easily. Well, thank you, Christine, so much for being with us today.
Such a gift. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, please subscribe and leave a review if you feel called to. It really helps our message reach more parents. You can also follow me on Instagram at Taylor Kulik for similar content, or visit my website at www.taylorkulik.com. I offer online courses where we really dive into infant and toddler sleep holistically. And we also offer one-to-one holistic sleep support services if you're looking to improve your child's sleep or shift patterns without sleep training. If you know a parent who would benefit from this podcast, please share. And if you'd like to financially support this podcast to allow me to create more episodes more often, you can visit anchor.fm/Taylor Kulik. I hope you'll join me next time.